Welcome to Mocktails and Masterpieces with the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. Today's episode is sponsored by Anthony Team Realty. This episode originally aired on May 14th, 2021. Hello, everyone. I'm Dana Stone, the Executive Director of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, and I'm here today with our Music Director, Matthew Kramer, and guest artist, Joshua Thompson, as we talk about some new ICO education programs that we've created this year. For those of you that aren't aware that weren't involved with our virtual gala back in February, we are launching a new program called What Makes Music American, which is why Joshua is here. He's been a valuable contributor to that program. But additionally, we have been thinking strategically about how we can reach children and students that are in desperate need of music education right now during the pandemic with our programming when we cannot physically come into schools. So through some collaborative discussion, we've come up with three exciting programs to reach children. So one of the things that we had to think about is how can we do this safely and how can we do this effectively? And fortunately, ICO has been very blessed to be working with WFYI on all of our virtual concerts this season. So they've partnered with us and created some great ways to engage the orchestra and also engage our youth in Indianapolis through these education programs. And logistically, it's gone quite well. We're really excited. We think that we'll have the completed projects ready for next school year so that we can reach lots of children here in this area.
Dana, thank you for that. I would add that the pandemic has made every organization and all of us individuals, make drastic changes in our life out of necessity to stay safe, but also to continue to create. And that's what we're excited about here. We were intending to have our annual silent movie in March with a live audience. And when that became impossible, we took the opportunity to record material for two of these education programs. And so I think that we've really forced ourselves here out of necessity to come into the 21st century and take advantage of recording technology, of being able to reach people in the comforts and the safety of their own house while continuing to perform on stage. And so I think that there's, of the stress that has obviously been there for the past 12 months, there's a lot of really great things that have come out of this that will continue to be part of what the ICO does going into the future. And, we always talk about the complexity of education programming with schools, the logistics of trying to get into the schools when students are so busy preparing for tests and their day is already so full, it's hard to get them out on the yellow school buses to visit us. And even if we go into a school, how many schools can we visit in a day or a week or even a month? In this case, with virtual programming, we'll be able to send this content around Indianapolis, central Indiana, and perhaps we hope even further than that. So I think that this will extend the reach of the ICO and also three vital programs, K through two, with our tall tales and long tales, three through eight for the program, which we're gonna be discussing with Joshua, What Makes Music American, and then a high school aged program, Domination and Defiance, about composers, historical figures, and world leaders that have faced adversity, racial injustice, and tyranny in their lives. So all three programs we're very excited about, but I'd love to jump right in with the program that we're looking towards in the coming weeks here with our artistic partner, Joshua Thompson. Joshua, I just want to start off by saying how much fun, really enjoyable this has been working with you collaboratively, putting this program together. I certainly hope that the experience has been very positive for you as well.
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you for having me here to the both of you. And fun would be an understatement, I think. As Maestro Kramer and I have kind of, put some things together and some stuff ends up on the cutting room floor and then we love what gets to stay on there. And we realize just how much music could really go into this program. So the difficult part has also been the most fun part, which is being, what stays and what goes and how do we rotate it. So I live for this type of stuff. So it's an honor and it truly is a treat to be a part of this. So thank you.
Joshua, I've been aware of your work since I've come to Indianapolis about 5 years ago. And what impresses me the most is your encyclopedic knowledge of the classical canon. I mean, it's for centuries, but you've also specifically targeted repertoire that's been underperformed, neglected, unjustly. And you're so passionate about it as a performer and advocate for this music, and you're so involved in different mediums as well as a way of communicating that, on stage performing as a pianist or a trumpeter, and then your podcast, for example. Perhaps you could just talk to us a little bit about, there it is, talk to us just a little bit about, how you're involved with all of these different mediums and how it really does serve for you to convey your passion for this music that you're advocating for.
Absolutely. I mean, it really goes back to probably me being about 5 or 6 years old when I first found out I had a passion for classical music, and it came through cartoons, right? And if you think about your Saturday morning experience, there was the auditory, there's the music that you hear, but there was also a visual component. And so I really feel like people of any age absorb and kind of are able to scratch that spirit of inquiry a little bit more and even deeper when we provide other mediums for our senses, whether that be, smell or taste or sight, and also in mediums with visual art, with instrumentalists, with dancers and all that, it just makes the creation of what we're doing and the message what we're doing a little bit more personable and memorable, I think. So I really enjoy what I do as a classical pianist and a music sociologist. I specialize in the research and performance and programming of masterworks are written by composers of African descent. The catalog is absolutely huge. And if you don't know those composers, you know composers who are adjacent to them. So when we're talking about Mozart, we have a Chevalier de Saint-Georges. When we're talking about Beethoven, we have a Samuel Coleridge Taylor. When we have a Dvorak, we've got a Harry Burley, and the list goes on and on. And so you don't have to be all that familiar with the names or the works. You already know some of this music. We just love to resurrect it, kind of blow the dust off of it and place it right where it should have been all along. And that's with these contemporaries who continue to shape and reshape and refine the classical genre. And at the end of the day, sometimes the histories and the stories are very serious and they're important, but it really is just music. And I just have fun doing those. And it's awesome that places like the ICO share that passion and that inquiry and are really working with a lot of artists locally and kind of walking hand in hand and figuring this new landscape out. And it's just a lot of fun. Long overdue, but it's a lot of fun.
Very well said. Let's talk a little bit about this program that you and I are building here. As you mentioned before, I think the hardest thing for me as well was to figure out what we can get into this program and then everything that we're going to have to leave out because of it. So the title, What Makes Music American, it's meant to be an open-ended discussion. What is it that, we hear Mozart, we hear Beethoven, we immediately identify it with the Austro-Germanic canon of music. You hear Debussy, it's a different sound world altogether. But America, with all of the complexity of the fabric of our country and all of the different influences and cultures that have come here and made it their home, have created art that is representative of all of those influences here. And so we're not giving anything away to say that we're going to start with the composers, two composers that you just mentioned, Dvorak and Burley. And Dvorak, of course, would be that name. People know the New World Symphony, and we have an excerpt from that, from the third movement with a distinctly Native American influence of the pentatonic scale. But perhaps Burley isn't a household name. And could you talk to us a little bit about Harry Burley and how he's found his way into our program?
Absolutely. So Burley, being a contemporary of Dvorak, and honestly, Dvorak was wildly intrigued by Burley's prowess as a, he's more known for his choral works and worked a whole lot with very prestigious, institutions in New York City and around the United States when he was writing, which is, think about the Reconstruction era, right? So if we're going from, 1840s-ish to about 18, not too far after the Civil War. For the fact checkers out there, trust me, I know the dates, I just don't have in front of me. But he's writing for a lot of these things. And what he's doing, because he is of a culture that has been brought to the United States, we sound different. There is a folk tune. There are spirituals. There are field songs. There is choral works. They're all wrapped up into one that makes this one small, tiny unit of what we consider this new burgeoning Black culture in the United States. And Dvorak really tapped into that, because very much like certain parts in the New World Symphony, we're getting not quite tone poems, but things that really help shape this musical landscape and also really help give kind of the sights and the sounds to the Deep South and from the places where these new peoples have been brought and located, albeit against their will, still creating a new culture that we continue to hear echoes of and even modern music through the 20th and 21st century. So wildly prolific in the choral works. And he just does such amazing works with a lot of things. I play his From the Southland. It's his only solo piano work. And it's just absolutely beautiful. It's not overly complicated because it's not supposed to be. It's just very pastoral, spirituals in the classical tradition.
So what Burley was doing is exactly what Dvorak encouraged other American composers to do, and what Dvorak was doing in his own country, which was mining Bohemian Czech folk music and incorporated into the classical structures. You know, there were very fine American composers in the mid-1800s, late 1800s. The problem was they all sounded European, you know, Chadwick and McDowell, great composers, but, you know, their music was not distinctly American. And in Burley, his influence on Dvorak shows him this rich tapestry in this country of all of this beautiful folk music and music that was, you know, really created on the soil here. And then, you know, you mentioned Through Mona and Pines, and we're going to play a brief arrangement of that, four strings. Before we turn the program over to you, and you've got a terrific piece here I'd like for you to talk about, and that collaborative element as well, which we're very excited about.
So really excited to. I'm born and raised here in Indianapolis, and I've always wanted to be a professional, you know, classical player my whole life. And I went to several chamber orchestra concerts as a kid. And you always have that, well, maybe one day, hopefully if I'm good enough, I'll get to perform and work with them. And we're here. So I'm really excited to do this with you all. It really is very much a dream come true. One of the pieces that I absolutely love is one of my favorite composers, William Grant Still. He's often known as the Dean of Classical Music for Black people, and just has so many compositions, I think well over 150, for pick an arrangement for big orchestra, small ensemble, or solo works and art songs. He's got it all. We're going to be doing his second movement from his Africa Suite, which is called Land of Romance. And this premiered, I want to say, about in 1932 or 1933. And it is such a beautiful three movement work that just gives such a wonderful sonic representation of this essence of Blackness and this aesthetic without being pejorative, without being stereotypical, but really taking the incantations and the rhythms and the sights and the sounds of this culture from this cradle of civilization. William Grant Still reimagines the actual creation. And that's what Land of Romance is all about. It's this romantic relationship we of all people have with our creator, whoever we think that is, that very much transcendental type of relationship that we have with it. And so in order to do that, the music is gorgeous, don't get me wrong, but creation has movement. And I think we really have to elevate the music and show that. So I'm bringing in a brilliant dancer by the name of Toni Moore. And she works in everything from ballet to contemporary dance to West African dance. And she and I, over the last couple of years, have really cultivated this piece in our own right to have this wonderful mix between melody and movement to give you as much of a 3D example and illustration of this masterpiece and the broader context that Still was talking about, with music and nature being so very much part of a human element, including Black people, which sometimes is not often highlighted, but it is, and we do it very well. So we're excited about that one, definitely.
What an incredible composer, really, and very highly regarded and performed in his lifetime, a composer of many, many firsts. the first opera at New York City Opera of American composer, first Black conductor of a major symphony orchestra, first one to have a symphony performed. You know, we were recording his Darker America this past weekend, which is a, you know, an incredibly powerful work. And a number of the musicians said, you know, the edition that we have is very hard to read, it's hand notated. And, you know, several of us all were in agreement. If there's any American composer more deserving of an urtext edition, a republication of these works, because there are so many of them. I mean, the symphony, eight operas, you know, hundreds of other additional works in the catalog as well. And, you know, the music is accessible, but, you know, sometimes these editions are hard to read. And then, you know, it's a composer really so deserving of that. And again, that catalog, I'm discovering more and more pieces I had no familiarity with myself. And thanks to my discussions with you, I've learned an incredible amount. You've also graciously offered to perform for us on this broadcast here. And now that we are just talking about the Grand Still, maybe this is a perfect opportunity here to insert your performance here. And just also to say again, how much we're looking forward to this recording in a month when it comes to it. So we're going to hand it over to Joshua here and his performance on piano. Joshua, that was terrific. That was Margaret Bond's Troubled Water, right?
Correct. It's one of my favorites. That's my, if I got to give folks the razzle dazzle, that's the one I pulled out in a performance, because obviously it's just brilliant. It is so much fun. It's jazz, it's blues, it's spiritual, it's hymns, it's classical tradition just mashed up. And it's just such a fun, entertaining piece, right? I love it.
Home run, absolutely. You know, and then in this program, just jumping ahead, we you know, Copland Variations on a Shaker Melody, Battle Hymn of the Republic, an incredible piece by Duke Ellington, which it might be the most exciting component of the program for me personally, because, you know, we know Duke Ellington as a you know, towering figure in American jazz music, but he wrote incredible works for orchestra, for large ensemble, ballet as well. And The River is a suite of music that for a ballet that he composed, and we've got an excerpt to share with that. I mean, the symphonic Duke Ellington, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, honestly.
It absolutely doesn't. I have been in love with that whole set since I was about 14 or 15 years old when I first heard it. I was like, who is that and what is it? And I would love for it to be programmed more often, so I'm glad that it is. And, you know, if we stop and think about, we try to put so many barriers between classical and other genres, where composition is composition. And if you're going to compose for a big band, you're doing the same thing for an orchestra, right? And you know, Ellington seamlessly did that. And so this is a wonderful way, instead of seeing them as separate, I love seeing the cultural and the musical through line between the genres as it progresses over the centuries. And he was brilliant about it. And I love how you all have chosen to really elevate his works in that sense, because it makes him so much more of a broader and, I think, compelling composer, at least for me anyway, right?
More orchestras, I find, are taking up these works too. They require very big forces, of course, but so does a Mahler symphony. Harlem, Black, Brown and Beige, Three Black Kings. There are several of these works that are just, you know, again, if anybody's not familiar with them, you can find them on YouTube, and they're, I mean, it's obviously Duke Ellington. You could hear that jazz influence, but of a symphonic nature, just remarkable. We're not leaving out, of course, the American Songbook, Cole Porter, Indiana's Own. We've got a fabulous artist that you've introduced us to, Kimberly Kinney, who's just, you know, I've heard her sing online. Just wait till we get her on stage and people get to hear, you know, her voice. Just something incredible altogether.
She's absolutely stunning. She is, whether we know it or not, we're going to be hearing the name Kimberly Kinney as an opera diva before we know it, because she's already got the star power. She loves the American Songbook. I think she loves to sing in general. But whether you're talking about gospel or hip hop and R&B or pop or arias, man, she does it all, and she does it all so well. So I had to absolutely say, hey, I'm fine, but y'all need to grab her, because she's easy to work with. She's fun. And I'm really looking forward to hearing and seeing her segment too, because she's going to knock it out of the park. She just will.
We have an artist that will be sharing our classical program, which is also next month as well. And we're going to have a mocktail dedicated to that in April. But Ruben Rangel is the first place winner of the most recent Sphinx competition, which is a strings competition held annually for exceptional young violin or young string players, I should say, of Latinx and Black string players. And this organization has grown exponentially in the last 25 years now to become a support system for string players taking auditions for funding, not only master classes and enhancing their study, but preparing them for entering, you know, the audition circuit, which is grueling for any young musician to travel around the country and to perform at auditions. But the number of laureates that I've worked with, it's been an incredibly rewarding experience for me the last 15 years. Ruben, I've not had the opportunity to work with, so I look very much for him coming to Indianapolis to perform one of the most, no, I should say the most popular American violin concerto there is. I don't think there's any competition in that regard. Samuel Barber's Violin Concerto. He'll play the third movement on our education concert, and we'll talk to Ruben next month about the entire Barber when he is playing on our subscription concert. Before we close out the program with a work by Gabrielina Franck, who is a award-winning, just one of the most successful living American composers now, I find. She's received commissions from major orchestras everywhere. It's a movement for strings called Andean Walkabout. It features her Peruvian ties. You could hear this very much in her compositional language. Before closing out our program with Rafael Hernandez's El Cubanchero, he was a Puerto Rican composer. I think you and I agree that this piece has to end the program because it's so much fun.
It is. If there's ever a piece, and actually there's quite a few of them sprinkled throughout the program where you're going to fight the urge to get out of your seat. And I'm like, don't fight it. Just roll with it. What a way to end a concert on a high note that kind of leaves you feeling super excited. It's an earworm. So if folks don't remember anything else, I think they'll have this one stuck in their head, and that will help recall all of the other pieces and just what this essence of this program is. Because it is it's a grab bag. It's a quilt that America continues to stitch together. And I think that's what makes it so much fun, because that quilt keeps getting bigger and bigger as we find tools that are effective to kind of make it so. So kudos for you picking this last piece, because it's fun. I listen to it almost all the time. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
And it's a great arrangement for the orchestra too. It fits our size. And, you know, I think you just said it perfectly there. I mean, that's really what this program is this quilt. We're starting at one end with it. You know, again, there's a lot of stuff that just because of the time, we're not able to incorporate, but there is a thread that we're following through. And that thread is that the cultural diversity that makes up this country, all of the influences from everywhere that we've come as a people, helps to create this narration, which is what makes music American. And it's an ongoing discussion. And when we actually get into the studio and we begin recording, we're going to continue to have as much fun as we've had putting the pieces on paper here. In my mind, we have the easy part. I want to go back to Dana here, because we're just going to record this music. We're going to give all of this material over to Dana, and Dana's got all of the work logistically here behind the scenes. You know, three education programs we're talking about putting together, Dana. What's going on in the back end of things with our WFYI partners, you know, our funding, our all of the work that needs to be done in the studio? You know, how complex of an undertaking really is this for us?
Well, it's triple what we've ever done before. In the past, you know, we had a simple one concert program of the Long Tails. What is it?
Tall Tales, Long Tails.
And that's an incredible program that we just recorded last weekend with the Indianapolis Children's Choir members doing some little hand signals. And it was so much fun, and it's so engaging and educational. But now we're expanding that. We have a program now that's going to reach every school-aged kid in this state if they're interested in receiving this programming. And there's a lot that goes into it. Certainly we have, you know, footage from five different cameras. We're splicing together new content, content that's recorded with the full orchestra, content that's recorded with just Joshua, interviews and some commentary to kind of tie everything together so that the curriculum really speaks to what these children need to learn. And we can be a really valuable resource, a local resource, if you will, of what makes music American and what is music education. So there's a lot going into it. And certainly we are reaching out to partners with Indianapolis Public Schools and beyond that, so that we can get this program to as many children as possible. Logistically, you know, there's some new hurdles that we've had to go through. Performance rights for a recording is very different from what we would typically do if we were doing a live performance. So navigating those issues, how long we can make these programs available, will they be on a rotation for performance and copyright issues? We're gonna work through all those details as we learn those obstacles and what the schools need. So this is a dialogue to work with the schools to provide the right programming at the right time, and also work with the publishing companies to meet all those logistical needs. But it's been a really exciting year. And I know you mentioned earlier the Sphinx Organization and Ruben, and ICO is proud to be a partner with the Sphinx Organization through the National Alliance for Audition Support. So we're excited to see what that partnership brings to us in the future as we continue to kind of bring new people to the ICO stage and engage Indianapolis in a really exciting way.
I think, Dana, you said that perfectly there. What most rewarding out of all of this, of course, great music, great educational content, but it's been the artistic collaborations, the partnerships, working with Joshua, for example, and then all of the talented soloists on this program. you know, our arts partners. There's these relationships that we continue to foster, make this entire experience, you know, so worth it in every possible way. So I'll go ahead and sign us out for now, because it's been an incredible discussion, as it always is with you, Joshua and Dana. You know, we're putting these programs together. There will be much more in the near future as we begin to edit them, and we develop the written curriculum to partner along with the videos that we're sending. And I believe that this will have far-reaching impact on school children and to music lovers, frankly, who want to learn a little bit more about these three different programs here. So on behalf of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra and my partners here, I'd like to thank you for tuning into this Mocktails, and we'll see you at our next ICO performance in April. Thanks, everyone.